I thought I was going to be introduced by Lance, but I guess. thank you very much for that introduction. I think one of the icebreakers I usually used was just to remind people that it's Nacho and not Nacho. And I'm surprised after 5 years that many people are still calling it that. Nacho represents the nation's 2,800 city, county, and tribal public health agencies. We're located in Washington, D.C. Our sister agencies like ASTO and AIM are also located in that area. We've had an immunization project cooperative agreement with CDC for the past 6 years, and what I'll do today is give you some information that'll help characterize local health department immunization programs and highlight some of the challenges and successes of delivering and assessing immunization services at the local level. What we did was a little bit different from what Nancy and her colleagues did with their state visits and conference calls to collect their data. We examined local jurisdictions with a mix of coverage rates, those who had low and struggling rates, those who were moderate and stagnant, and those who were consistently good. We relied on some NIS data for those jurisdictions that were urban IAPs, such as Baltimore, Miami, Boston, and Seattle, and local data sources for those who had never been oversampled as part of the NIS, such as Clark County, which is Las Vegas, and Shasta County, California. And I guess I have to try to the left. Okay, great. Okay. So what I'm going to do today is just give you some background about our motivations to conduct these site visits, then review some of the goals, discuss the methods that we used to gather the information and data related to local immunization program operations. Then I'll highlight our key findings and results and outline some of the conclusions that we drew from the data that we collected and some of the lingering questions that remain about why coverage rates are all over the map and how we can help improve local coverage rates. Just some background about the local public health landscape. The operational challenges faced by local health departments when delivering immunization service in the public sector are numerous, as they are with every other level of governmental public health. You know, there are the new vaccines to cover an ever-expanding list of diseases, some, you know, now prevent cancer. And in addition to that, we have the vaccine-preventable diseases that we thought that we conquered. And we've covered some of those here. Just talk to your colleagues at San Diego who've been dealing with the measles outbreak, or talk to your colleagues from Wisconsin who dealt with huge mumps outbreaks. And they'll tell you that, you know, these stressors are coming from the top, as well as the re-emerging stressors that are coming from the bottom, and they're just squeezing public health from all sides. And also add to that mix just the increasingly crowded and complex schedule that you have to interpret and translate and communicate, you know, to providers, to families, to schools, you know, you name it, it's just there. Some of the goals of what we wanted to do about understanding the characteristics and activities of local immunization programs. The goals for what we did grew out of a few key questions that came from our members, and when our members were asking and we talked to our partners, they also had similar questions. Two of those questions were, how do immunization program operations and challenges differ from one city or county to another? And the other question was, what are some of the intangible elements that are likely associated with better pediatric immunization coverage rates when you're looking at it from a city or county perspective? And just taking those questions, and what we wanted to do with these site visits is that we wanted to create more of a kaleidoscope, something more than just a snapshot of local immunization programs, something that would give us a better, fuller picture of what that actually is by pulling in data, experiences, observations that, when blended together, could give us some more insight into what's really happening in local immunization programs. So on to our methodology. We used a case study design, and we had to figure out a method that we could use that would fit into our budget and fit into our time restraints and still give us some information that would help us answer some of the questions that were coming up from our members, and two, help us outline some action steps that we could actually address some of the challenges that local health departments were facing in terms of their immunization operations. So we conducted some structured site visit interviews with local health department staff. State health department staff also attended often, and key partners like local chapters of provider organizations like AAP and AAFP. And we identified and collected some qualitative data for some explanatory variables around the different coverage rates that were noted. And then we analyzed the transcripts and our notes from our observations to do a content analysis as well as thematic analysis for emergent themes. So these are the local programs that we visited, and we visit them between January 05 and January 06. There were a mix of programs with varying success and various coverage rates, and we also looked at 43133 coverage, so we were consistent with Nancy's group in that sense. One thing you'll probably notice as you're looking at this list is that a lot of them are in California, and you're probably asking, well, why in California? Did you just want to get out of Washington, D.C. and go to the sunny part of the country? But there are two really legitimate reasons for that. One is because that we work with a lot of those sites in California on other immunization and infectious disease projects, so that we just took advantage of being there to conduct these interviews. And the other is just that it's a nation unto itself. I mean, it's a state with 37 million people and a lot of health departments, so why not look at it? And just the diversity of health departments that's in that state, you know, is prime ground for answering some of these questions. And on to selection criteria. We looked at the 43133 coverage rates, and I think one of the things that you're asking is how did you go about deciding on these beyond just picking the California groups? We looked at those jurisdictions that were urban IEPs and those who had available local data about their coverage rates for 2002, 2003, and 2004. And once we got that information, we then looked at some functional definitions for coverage. What would be good coverage? What would be moderate coverage? What would be low coverage? So we just did a clean cut. If they were 80% and above in terms of coverage, that was classified as good. Moderate would be mid-70s range, that would be moderate, and then low would be less than 75% coverage. And we also wanted to get a good cross-section of types of local health departments, urban, rural, suburban, units of local government, units of state government, which are usually district health departments, city or county health departments, and then some that were city-county hybrids, and then just those jurisdictions with a diversity of demographic profiles in terms of race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, percentage of households that don't speak English, whatever demographic challenges that a health department could face. We wanted to make sure that we had a lot of them in the mix so that we could get that much richer data. And so what I want to do is just go over four examples from the 16 that we did visit, and these are just some of some exemplars that may stand out about that. Miami-Dade, large urban, city-county hybrid. Shasta County is vast, very rural. It was the only jurisdiction we went to that had a palpable American Indian population. Clark County, Nevada, of course, is large, diverse, one of the fastest growing counties in the country. And Seattle King County is large, urban, and one of the only one that we visited in the Pacific Northwest, and it's also a universal state. So Miami-Dade County, breaking this up, looking at what are some of the challenges that they communicated to us, and then what are some of the success elements that they communicated to us about their good rates. So Miami is an example of a health department with good coverage rates. It's large, urban, they have a sizable immigrant population. It's a lone health department that has very different functions than some of the other regional health departments within Florida. You know, they're factions of the state, but Miami-Dade County seems to have a lot more autonomy than some of the other health departments. They've developed strong cross-silo, the interagency partnerships, and that's allowed them to leverage a lot of the internal resources and know-how that's on par with some of the external relationships and partnerships that they've developed. And the Special Immunization Program has partnered effectively with emergency preparedness activities within the Health Department to do a lot of outreach and access some of their mobile programs to make connections outside of their own area of expertise within immunization and leverage some of those connections that other programmatic areas have, like translation services, distribution points to parents and the public about the importance of immunization, so they're able to integrate their messages into standing systems of communications out to the public. And one key thing that stood out about them is that they have a very effective maternal infant education program. They target the largest birthing hospitals and visit new moms in hospital, and they push down the leadership, the face of that program. It's not the health department nurses, but clerks who go out and do these visits. And so the clerks are interacting with these new mothers, and they have ready set packets of information about all the resources that are available, about the importance of immunizations, about points of access within the public health system as well as the healthcare system. And it really gives them information on where they can go, who they can call on for all the information that they'll need about any service that they'll need in that capacity. And a key message in this face-to-face interaction that they have is that they communicate the message clearly to them that they, as parents, need to know as much about immunization as the providers that they see, and just hammering that message home over and over and over again. And the relationship that they developed with the birthing hospitals really had some unintentional benefits, like it really improved the health department's data collection efforts and being the community information resource on immunizations, because they reported that a lot of these mothers who they see that in the birthing hospitals end up calling them months later for information about other services, like how do I access WIC? How do I enroll my child in X program? So their sources of information and getting those packets of information to them really helps. So our next example is Shasta County. Shasta is struggling to improve their coverage rates. They're really rural and spread out. There are only 1 million people in the entire county, and they have very few pediatric providers. The clinics there can sometimes be outposts out in the mountains, and just an example of that is when we were there, we took an outing out to one of these clinic sites, and it was an hour-long drive along a very winding road. So the health official had a lot of time to tell us stories about, you know, some of the outreach and education efforts that they've had with immunization. And one of those stories was that very road that we were on was iced over, so she had to borrow the plane from the fire department to fly up immunizations to these clinics because they had to vaccinate some people against rabies. So their challenges being a very rural setting are quite formidable. And one of the other concerns that they have is that their low-cost immunization services, they're trying to balance that marketing that service with keeping children grounded in their medical home. And their strong card in terms of how they're trying to improve their coverage rates is their community outreach. They have community health advocates who are just lay people in the community, and they're identified leaders in that community, and most are from ethnic minority communities, and this helps connect the health department to those populations in multiple ways. It gives them a venue into ethnic media, into religious organizations, various cultural celebrations that are going on, and it acts as a platform to give the health department a face in the community so people know that it's accessible to them. And it's a key means for them to address any inequities that are there, including the inequities that they see in coverage rates. And this is just some pictures that the health department shared with them about some of their community outreach activities. They focus on reaching those ethnic communities and addressing health inequities by really focusing on some key issues around social justice and equality, Indian health issues, identifying those community health advocates and making sure that they're integrated and have all the training and the information that they need on an ongoing basis. Translation services for Spanish-speaking individuals. They have an African-American influenza outreach program, and they have an active regional multi-county approach to delivering immunization services. So that's another attempt that they're making to find innovative ways to improve their coverage rates. And moving on to Clark County, Las Vegas. This is one of our, like I said, one of the fastest growing jurisdictions, and they're struggling to improve their coverage rates. For these reasons, because they're fast growing, they have tremendous demographic challenges because the demography keeps shifting and growing, and there's a growing spectrum of agencies that are trying to meet the needs of this rapidly growing and changing population. They were rotated on as an IEP to the National Immunization Survey for a year, and what the data showed was that it confirmed what their local assessments were finding, that they had low coverage rates that were in the 60s. The health department is unusual, but our site visit there was also unusual because it was the only one that was 2 days long. We spent quite a bit of time there. So we went to every school and every special project and every clinic site and really talked to a broad spectrum of the partners that they have. And something unusual about it also is that that one county has two-thirds of the state's population. So their challenges are unique in that sense, and they have really extreme demographic challenges because it's always changing, and they have a really complex workforce. And they have cross-state partnerships with San Bernardino, California. Their coalition is strictly volunteer, and it's lacking in some leadership, and that was a weak point for them. They're trying to improve the coalition and its effectiveness. AFIX was a problem for them, that they needed to increase their AFIX site reviews and site visits. They weren't conducting enough of them. And the community outreach is one of their strengths, and that they have multiple media campaigns throughout the year, and they have them all in multiple languages, and they partner with the local TV stations to spread the word about age-appropriate immunizations. And their reminder recall is also one of their strengths, and that they have a host of community volunteers who help them host a reminder recall campaign one Saturday each month to help boost coverage by calling parents and reminding them to bring their kids in for their immunizations. And this is just a picture that we took. That van is one of the mobile services that they have, one of the special projects in Clark County. Just one of their strategies to improve coverage rates overall. Just one of their special outreach projects. Then moving on to Seattle King County as our fourth example. It's a city-county hybrid. It's large, urban, universal. Has moderate coverage rates, but those rates for the past year seem to be stuck and not improving. When we talked to them, we had a really full house. We had the State Health Department there. We had local chapter of AAP and AAFP there, and the full immunization staff from the Health Department. And some of the themes that came out as a challenge was that they have limited local funding, and it was inconsistent with, if you look at one of the success elements, the political leaders or advocates, the problem there was the political leaders advocate for public health, but then you have to prioritize your limited budget, and what was trumping everything was correctional juvenile correctional issues were trumping the public health issues, so more money was going to those concerns as opposed to public health concerns. And one other thing that stood out when we did the interviews with them is that they've tracked school exemptions, or they continuously track them, and they've noticed an uptick in those, and they've noticed an uptick in parental hesitancy about getting their children vaccinated, and they're trying to figure out ways how they can stamp that out and improve their coverage, how they can address the concerns that parents have about vaccine safety and get that information out there so that they can improve their coverage rates and get them out of the mud. The challenge for them, as it is for all of us, is just to figure out a way to help those parents overcome their lingering doubts about vaccines. And I think, as you know, some of the recent things in the media have not really helped in that sense. They've just added to that challenge. And the other thing is just the partnerships. They work really closely with their private providers and hospital systems, and that has really helped them. And their interagency collaborations as well. There are specific synergies that they've done throughout the department. The immunization and communicable disease programs are combined. They collaborate with staff in public health preparedness, and they have a strong working relationship with the State Health Department's immunization program. So those were our four examples. We talked to all those people. We had reams and reams of notes and reams of observations and reams of things that they gave us that they had done, every pamphlet, every flyer, every fact sheet we took back with us. So what were some of the results? We transcribed all the interviews, and then we did a content analysis, just looking for some repeated keywords and phrases to see if the health department's reports about their efforts to improve coverage were converging in a certain direction, or were they still just all over the map. So the keywords and phrases that came up in all of the interviews were credibility, leadership, and resources. They were really concerned with their credibility and their relationship with the public. Like, were they maintaining that, or was that somehow being eroded? And that was tied to a lot of the resources and a lot of popular opinion about what are they competing against in terms of getting their message out about immunization versus what people are seeing on TV, reading in the newspaper, or hearing on various sites on the internet. And leadership was an issue as well. Was there a champion within the health department? Were there champions within the community to help drive on home the message about the importance of immunization? So those three things came up in all of those, and it was they were tremendously important to them. So then we took this and we looked for certain themes, analyzing the content of the transcripts from the interviews and the materials that they gave us. And so what were the emergent themes in that? There were a lot of them, but these are the top that came out about partnerships, the quality of their relationship with the state health department, local funding and advocacy. And the advocacy is more political support and having champions within the health department and champions within the community. The communications on the left-hand side is more about interagency communications, like do they have that cross-silo communications going on so that they can all leverage each other's resources as much as possible. Demographics, like what was the makeup of their population and what challenge that that faced to them when they were trying to go out and do outreach and education and interventions and improve their coverage in that sense. Having community assessments and having a systematic way to identify pockets of needs. Having access to up-to-date information. And then public and provider outreach, education, and communication was really important. And addressing inequities. Just some more results on that. Just when you boil everything down and go through all the transcripts and go through the content analysis and go through the thematic analysis, just what were the things that stood out? For success elements, it was doing the regular community assessments, really going out there and figuring out what's going on in your community and having a systematic way to make those kinds of measurements to help you with the decisions that you'll have to make about how to plan and how to address them and how do you address the inequities that you may be finding. Having robust partnerships, not just having them in name, but actually having them be active. Because what they reported is just that the strength of their programs and the strength of those partnerships were predicated on what they did, that they were always meeting, that they were always having discussions, that they were always having dialogue, and that's what made their relationship strong. Just the effective advocacy and the collaborations with the community stakeholders and partners. And more were some of the challenge elements that stood out. Not having a coalition stood out, or having a very weak coalition. Weak or limited partnerships that seem to exist on paper, but not in reality. Limited local funding and minimal political advocacy. And some of the conclusions are here. There were multiple reasons that we saw for the mixed results. And although they were often conducting the exact same activities, the outcomes were very different. Just characterizing, you know, going through these interviews and characterizing the experiences of local immunization programs, we just found that, you know, looking at all of those data and getting the information from them and having us tell us their stories was just a very useful tool to help us inform, you know, some of the policy priorities that we should have as an organization that represents local health departments and what we should be communicating to policymakers at every level, about what resources they need, what information they need, what technical assistance they need, and just trying to get, you know, what they need with matched with what's coming down the pike as best that we can. And then our next steps. So I think after hearing what Nancy had to present about states and what I've had to talk about with locals, you're probably asking, well, okay, what are you all going to do with this information? And for us, there's a two-step process, the short term and the long term. And then the short term is we're going to go back over some of the qualitative data that we collected and combine it with some of the quantitative data. We do a profile, a census of all local health departments and collect a lot of data on them. So we want to go through what we've collected qualitatively with some of the quantitative data that profile collects. And that, again, will give us a sharper idea of some of the variables that predict coverage rates. And then on the longer term, just we'll continue our efforts to advocate on behalf of local immunization programs by focusing on roles where state and federal agencies can help make a difference, primarily through advocacy, looking for efficiencies and synergies in ways that we can partner better together and improve our communication and information flow. And we know that all of those things will just really have a big impact on outcomes and improve, you know, some of the processes that are in place already. And then just helping our members, the local health departments, just set clear and cogent standards and communicate those with our state and federal partners. And coming to the end, just acknowledging everyone who helped in this process. Catherine Schaff, who is no longer with Nature, who's now with Alameda County Health Department, was my colleague who helped me during this whole process. Acho Bhatt with CDC and Nancy Fasano joined us on some of those, and the rest of my Nature staff. Thank you.
I think we want to open the floor for questions for either of our speakers. And we may use our prerogative to get started up here with questions from the moderators as you guys get to the microphones.
I have, I'll take that prerogative, okay. I guess. I have one question for both. Actually, I was kind of struck in terms of the elements of success that I don't think either of you really mentioned the role of, and any role at all of evaluation, and I was kind of surprised. And I was wondering, and JR, sort of towards the end, you talked about how they're going to improve processes in place, and it struck me that you kind of need to evaluate in order to improve. And so I was wondering if evaluation really came up in any of the visits and any of the looks that you had, especially given that we're really trying to make immunization programs more evaluative through the grants program.
One of the questions on the visits that we made was, have you formally evaluated any components of your program? And the answer was typically no. And I think we'd already made the decision to include evaluation as a requirement in our grant guidance, but I think without guidance and the kind of assistance that we're providing now, evaluation is kind of a foreign area for grantees, and it does require a certain amount of, if not expertise, then at least a sense of the process. And so my sense is that's, I don't think we asked them why they weren't doing it, but we did ask them if they were doing it. And so now we know that programs are going to be evaluating, and we'll learn from that, as will they.
I'll use this one. I think mine got buried, and because there were so many emergent themes that I had to limit it because I only had one slide. It got buried in the technical assistance part. They were requesting help on how they can do the evaluation, just giving them some practical instruction on what are some of the things that we can do so that we really find out how we're doing.
Now I'll take my prerogative. It was clear in both of the presentations, and so this is actually a question for both of you, that people, partnerships, champions were really important. And one thing that especially struck me during your presentation, Nancy, when you actually showed a picture of a real live person who is clearly in a really important role is that people change. And the hope is that you kind of establish the connections so that it doesn't matter when people change. And I think, JR, when you mentioned that at the Seattle King County meeting, AAP and AAFP representatives were part of that, that's a really strong statement. But I wonder what was sort of talked about in terms of when you have people and partnerships that are important, how do you kind of keep that going so that it lasts beyond the individual people, since people do move on? I just wonder if that issue of kind of sustaining that, how that came up in the visits either to the state or local health departments.
We did ask questions about stability of staff within the program. And in some cases, the staff has been very, very stable. And in other cases, there have been turnover. But often in those cases where there's turnover, it's been people sort of moving up through the program. So it's still a certain level of consistency in terms of understanding the program and knowing who the partners are. And while this wasn't a specific question that we asked in our interviews, I think there, in these programs, there is probably enough consistency in terms of staff that they can say that one manager, for example, can pass on, or whoever's left after manager departs, say, we work with this organization. And I think as long as you keep the relationships going, then you can work your way through the changes, although it really does seem to help when there aren't a lot of changes.
I think with us, in terms of the two types of communications that I had, the interagency and then the external, and the robust partnerships in that, part of that robust was having the vertical and the horizontal. And you're setting systems in place so that the people can be interchangeable. But lines of communication are running deep, you know, between the health department and their partnerships. And one person can be that champion, but you have multiple champions within that, so you have that redundancy structured in there.
One more. One thing that strikes me is that one state or you know one county, and then that's what you know is one state or one county, and that the structure of governments, because so many things that people might want to accomplish actually involve other parts of a state or local government. And I just wonder, and maybe this falls under people, but sort of you can be structured in a way that makes it really easy to interact with the people you need to, or you can be structured in a way that in fact they're under someone else, and that can be challenging. And I was just sort of wondering, since that's something that is not an easy thing to address, if you heard a lot of that as an issue, or if actually those kind of structural elements weren't as important as they might seem because people find workarounds. And I guess what I was thinking of kind of at the state level is, you know, the Medicaid agency. We have so many things in common with them in terms of goals, but you can be in one part of the state government, they can be in another, and that can be challenging. So
we did see that difference. And there are, and I have visited states where the Medicaid folks are down the hall or on the next floor, and that just makes it a lot easier. But I think in cases where they aren't either in the same, sometimes they're in the same state agency and sometimes they're not, when they're not, then I think we saw that the immunization program has reached out and made that relationship. I mean, that they recognize the importance of that relationship. So I think it's easier if they're just down the hall. But if they're not, they work to form that relationship with their counterpart in the Medicaid program.
I think a similar county perspective would be relations, say, like WIC, that we have some jurisdictions that really broke down that wall. You know, the WIC would push back saying it's not our goal. You know, we're not here to help the immunization program reach their goals. We're here to make sure that children get, you know, their nutritional needs. But once, you know, that barrier was broken and the relationship just became solidified, they saw the value of having this face from the health department being there twice a week, you know, every week, and they became just a valuable resource. It's like we're all in the county, we all have similar objectives, let's look at those areas where we can form some synergies. And they really have done tremendous things in terms of building and solidifying that relationship.
Hi, Jeannie. This is, might be a question for all everybody on the panel, but Lance, you had mentioned evaluation. I think, you know, the major evaluation that prompted a lot of this investigation discussion was the NIS rates. And, you know, we know that some of that evaluation is going away with these large counties, or maybe Clark County, Miami-Dade, Seattle. And I was wondering if, you know, JR, you had mentioned that there's both stressors, there's, of course, financial stressors on local health departments, but in a lot of states, Nancy, you mentioned it also, there's good relationships with the state health department. I was wondering if you had a sense of what, if a lot of states are taking advantage of the offer of the buy-in to the NIS for their large counties so we can keep up this type of assessment.
It sounds like a question for you, Jim.
Yeah. Well, I guess one thing I want to take a chance to give a plug for is local assessment, even when it can be done with the NIS, is never done at the granularity, I think, that you want when you have to make program decisions, because the NIS doesn't get granular enough. Of course, we love the NIS, Jim, no criticism intended. So, I mean, I think immunization registries, which I know in a number of the state visits Nancy mentioned, were so important. And I love the quote, we wouldn't be where we are today without the immunization registry from Wisconsin. And last year, I think we saw some really neat work on using the registry and taking into consideration that it's not fully completely populated sometimes in Oregon, but still being able to get that granular coverage is, I mean, I think that's one of the messages here. So just a plug for immunization information systems.
Me too, because it's population-based. It can really help you zero in on specific kids, specific neighborhoods and that sort of thing, whereas the NIS data or other surveys are an estimate and don't give you that same kind of information.
Oh, hey, I've got compatriots that are going, it's 5 o'clock, so I'll be quick. I have spent many hours agonizing about this particular question, and I continue to be intrigued about why these clusters are there. And as Nancy said, you just sort of go, huh? And when I've talked to other people about that, the suggestion has been the basic structure of the whole healthcare system in an area, like maybe there's a lot more HMO, et cetera. But yet I know of some states in the Northwest, and Alaska isn't one of them. I'm talking about other places that, in my opinion, have great registries, great relationship kind of people. And so I keep wondering, is there anything else that we're missing in this that might help explain some of this clustering effect also?
Well, one of the questions we ended up asking in the states in the Northeast was, after I think maybe one or two visits, was, is there a difference in the physician culture in particular areas? And it felt to me like that was perhaps more the case in the Northeast than the Midwest, so I'm not quite sure whether this holds, but we did talk to a couple of physicians about this, and then we didn't make it part of our interview questions, but we started asking this when physicians were identified to us as partners. And one of the physicians said, this was part of my training when I was in residency, and that physicians often stay in the area where they got their training, so that if this was part of their training, to focus on immunization, to value that, and then they stayed where they got that training, then that can have an influence both on their practice and potentially on the practice of their colleagues. So, I mean, I've been thinking for years that there could be sort of physician culture issues that could be regional, and that whether the training influences that or other physicians in the community who are more vocal in some way influence that, I'm not sure. But I think there might be some of that. And I don't know, Lance and Jeannie, if you have a sense of that from your own training or not. But we did start asking that question, and often they would say, yes, this was part of my training, and most of these states had a medical school. So that could be an issue.
One more thing.
I do want to say that I think all of the program managers in the programs that we visited, and there might be one or two who didn't make it to the little informal discussions we had, but they have all offered to be resources to their colleagues. And we've even thought about whether there's a way to sort of formalize that, but at least in an informal way, they are all absolutely willing to talk to you about what they do, what particular things work or don't work. So do feel free to pick up the phone and talk to these program managers. They are not unlike you, and yet I do think that just talking to them may generate some ideas for you. So take advantage of the fact that you've got some consultants in your midst, and give them a call and just see what they can share with you.
Hi, my name is J.R. Jeffra. I'm from Arizona. For the panel, exactly, you talk about leadership champion. How exactly do you attract them and develop them among your community or community as a community advocate?
I think if I had the answer to that, I would be wealthy. That's a good question. We didn't ask specifically like where these champions came from. They just were. But I think Miami-Dade would probably be an example of a place that cultivates the champions, because they push down the decision-making and leadership to every level, you know, with their partnership and even within their agency. They just don't look to the usual suspects to carry messages out to the community. They push that down to even the clerks carrying out communities, to carrying out the message to the community and interacting, you know, with the people who they want to affect. So I think that that's an example of how you start cultivating the champions and the leadership that you can grow within your jurisdiction.
If I could just add to that comment, you're exactly right about Miami. I'm Chuck Alexander from Florida. And the champion theory, not to discredit anything, was led by the state health officer who was previously there. And that permeated the whole state. And certainly Miami, being the largest county in Florida, takes that ball and runs with it. I mean, not to discredit what they've done at all, they do a great job. But that whole theory was pushed by the state health officer, who is very dynamic.
Just one more comment on that. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was having that conversation with someone right before I came here about how you cultivate that leadership at, you know, at the grassroots, you know, and from the grass top, so that it all comes together to a comprehensive, you know, program within your jurisdiction. So thank you for bringing that up.